In this week in 1977, it's the first time out of non-league we drew with Halifax Town 3-3, with Jeff Bryant scoring our first goal in the Football League. We are the same old Wombles. We're back. Season through, episode two. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by mon frère, Niall Cooper, and Detective Adam Proctor. More on that later. He's been doing some digging for us, which is very exciting. Today we're going to chat through blooming Bromley, and then we're going to have a bit of a more of a dive into what's been going on with the DTB and conversations that have been happening there, flying around social media. But before we kick on, point of interest, chaps. So, Jeff Bryant scored our first goal in the Football League in 1977. But who scored our first goal second time out of non-league? Now, I can tell you it was on the 6th of August and we lost 3-2. Come on.
Stuart.
That's right, Alan Coops. Good memory. Or Googling.
No, not Googling.
Jamie Stewart.
We lost. Did we lose 3-2 to Bristol
We lost
Rovers?
three. We lost 3-2. We were two down, got back to two all, and then conceded a penalty with 5 minutes to go.
That's unbelievable. I can't remember who scored on Saturday, what the score line was. Yeah, no, Niall smashes that out of the
Luckily,
park.
none of us can remember Saturday, Adam, so that's all right. Yeah, exactly, Adam. We don't need to remember Saturday, mate. That's fine. Oh yeah. So anyhow. Since our last episode, we have now played Bromley twice, and we won the most important game, which was the League Cup game. So we're now into the second round of the League Cup, where we're playing Premiership opposition, playing Ipswich at home on the 28th, Wednesday the 28th, I believe, at Plough Lane, which is fantastic because it's, more money in the bank. We're bringing, Ali Hamady's coming back. It's all a wonderful thing. And so the second game was really, what was the point? It was just a league game against Bromley. I mean, their first foray into it. We kind of gave it to them. But Adam, I have a feeling did you watch both the games or did you watch just the league game?
I only watched the league game. I didn't watch
And what was
both.
your so you missed the big cup game
I
that's
missed the
like,
big cup game, yeah, obviously. No, I watched the league game. A bunch of the first half was mainly distracted by people complaining how terrible the Sky Sports buffering was. And so I was watching it via VPN for the International Dons thing. So I paid my extra tenner because I don't want Sky. And it was the same stream, but I had less buffering issues. So there was some stuff going on. And the other thing that was the issue was that the WDON guys were not commentating. And they weren't commentating even on the audio pass, the international pass, obviously not on Sky Sports. And it was the same Sky Sports commentator on all of those. And I mean, I'm not singling this person out, but this commentator was rubbish. But what I can tell is that so far in League Two matches, the commentary has been pretty awful. And it sounds, from what I can understand, is they're not at the games. They're watching the same stream that we're watching, and they weren't even commentating. Like half the time, there was like these massive gaps of no. I thought there was no audio at first. I was like, "Oh, where's the commentary? Have I not picked the right audio?" And it's just they weren't speaking. And of course, the pronunciation of all the players was also incorrect again, which was winding me up. So a bunch of the first half, I was distracted by the buffering discussions and the fact that the commentary was dreadful. I think I mean, they had replays. It had one camera angle, I think. It wasn't so bad on the Don's International thing. But having said that, I don't think I would have been enthralled by the football had I not been distracted by that, because there wasn't much going on. Like, it was a pretty lame kind of game from what I could tell. We had a couple of sh we had a load of possession, but really didn't do anything with it. We had one shot that sort of skimmed, fizzed. That's what the commentator kept saying. They kept saying fizzed a lot. Everything fizzed across the...
Well, they've obviously got their commentating thesaurus there.
Yeah, they got the little
fizz.
Book. So one ball fizzed. One ball for us fizzed across and like hit the post and came out. And after that, I mean, they obviously then went on to score two completely they just on the counter attack. Our defence just fell apart, and both shots, from what I could tell, they scored. A load of people, obviously Goodman, were not happy with Goodman. I don't think it was necessarily his fault. The defending was pretty terrible for both goals, but he certainly flailed around a little bit more than I would have liked to see from a goalie. So, yeah, that was, it was a bit of a shame, because off the first game of the season... I mean, the other issue, obviously, is is Bromley at home, first game in the league. They're going to go for it. And it was a different set of players, wasn't it, to the Tuesday night? It was back to the Saturday league setup. I don't know whether that was an issue. My only thing was a couple of the bits afterwards. I think Johnson or a couple of our players didn't seem to think that the game went okay. And I was like, it didn't go okay.
I think all the feedback we get from the supporters, and I take it from them really, is a very flat game. Part of me does wonder whether... Well, there's a few contributing factors. I do wonder if there's a slight hangover from the cup game, because I just wonder sometimes, do the players think we've got this big game coming up against Ipswich? Because we played them in the FA Cup last year, and off the back of that, obviously Alhamadi's got a move, so maybe people are thinking about that. It was Bromley's first game back in the league, so obviously they're going to be well up for it, and that's going to be something you've got to combat as well. And I was hearing also, one of the things that JJ was saying was that there's a problem with the transitions. When we're transitioning. And I'm thinking to myself, transitions? Things have changed, haven't they? I need to get this glossary back up. Transitions. Is that just when we give the ball away? Is that what we're trying to say? It's the transitions is like, we've given the ball away. Is that it? And this other thing, which really frustrates me, is this thing called low block. It's very difficult when people are sitting in a low block. So is that just the defending deep? Is that what we're trying to say here? So, transition when we're giving the ball away, and a low block is when it's deep defending. I mean, dear me. Anyhow, but I know Niall, you've got a lot of love. You've got a lot of love for what are they called, the Raven, the Rooks, whatever they are. They're one of the big blackbird things, aren't they? It's that nickname, Bromley.
No, so obviously what they are is they are Slytherin, because you were basically going to say Ravenclaw, but they're not. They're Slytherin. That's my view of Bromley. Very much that is it. It's largely because I happen to now live close to there, and they are called Bromley, because it's not Bromley, and they, I don't know, whatever. I've just, I've, but I don't know. And then there's the whole history of all the kind of dodgy goals from before and all the rest of it. I am not a fan, just putting it out there. Very much, they are Slytherin. So that's,
I love
that's
that. I love the idea that now we can actually put the opposition teams are playing it into Harry Potter houses.
Well, they're not Ravenclaw, are they? They are called the Ravens. They're not Ravenclaw, because Ravenclaw's quite a nice house, isn't it? Whereas Slytherin, clearly they are. So that's my view. We're called Bromley Slytherin. That's fine. I think I'm happy with that. If we come out of the podcast and everybody starts calling them Slytherin, that's fine.
I love it. Already, I love the fact this podcast has taken a weird turn, but that's it. So, we've got Bromley and Slytherin. Wickham, I don't know. I'm thinking Hufflepuff, but this is what happens when you have children, when you're growing up I'd like to say it's growing up with young kids, but to be honest with you, I watched the Harry Potter films and Taps wasn't poor when they first came out. I've got no excuses, but I like it. Lead to who's what house is your team in? Anyhow, so yeah, that's the.
I mean, Matt, the Fair Game Index is coming out this week on Thursday, so you can all find out who actually is in Gryffindor or Slytherin or whatever.
I love that.
It's like, just as a little hint, that Crawley are definitely in Slytherin.
But it's yeah. So anyhow, we're the Bromley game. So we're into the next round of the cup, which is, obviously last year was quite exciting because we had that trip away at Chelsea. This time we've got Ipswich, and I'm wondering how interested they're going to be in that competition. To be honest with you, but I'll be interested to see. And talking of cups, this we're recording this before. We play Wickham in the whatever it is cup, and I think nothing says how important a cup is than being sponsored by a second hand dealership, a regional second hand dealership, with a whole load of B teams in. I mean, really, what is the point of it? Most of the under 23s, I think, that are in these seem to be on loan to other clubs anyhow. So I'm not sure the benefit that it really gives those Premier League teams. And let's face it, Chelsea could have their own cup competition. The amount of players they've got, they could probably field a league. It's just, I mean, I yeah. Anyhow, tonight we're in the second hand car cup. Against Wickham.
The thing is, though, we won't. None of us will go to the cut and shut trophy or whatever it's called, but we will definitely be looking at our phones from 7:45, whatever.
I know we
so,
are.
you
We, I
know,
mean,
what can you do?
listen. We are. That is true. We're going to pretend we're not interested in the result, but we will be checking in. I know, Adam. And to be honest with you, if we get into the quarters or the semis, I will be going along. I'm a fickle fan, and if we got to Wembley, I would be there. But it just feels like there's an opportunity here, which is such a shame, because there's an opportunity for it to have been a decent cup competition. Also, can I just say I've got an idea. I've got an idea. I think this would give it more value, right? The winner of this competition should get 3 points. Because I think there's not much money. There's not much money in it. But if you win it, you get given 3 points in the league. That's my new idea for
I mean,
the.
I'm thinking based on how good our podcast is that this time next year we will probably be the sponsors of that cup. So,
That's right.
we'll be able to afford it.
Yeah. The same old Wobbles
I
Cup.
have to say, to be honest, right? Sorry to be a bit of a spoiler on this. Morally, I still think it's completely and utterly impossible for us to sponsor that thing. Just putting out there, just for our listener, morally. We don't really like this cup because of the B teams in it, right? So just putting it out there, that's our kind of view. So if we were sponsoring it, we would have to say, except for B teams, right? You can't get anything. There'll be a special sponsorship deal. But there'll be other kind of things involving franchise as well. So it'd be a very complicated sponsorship deal, so just saying that maybe it might not be one for us guys, just putting it out there.
All right, I love that it's a serious thing that we would seriously, we will be sponsoring the whatever this is. It's the what is it really called? Is it the Football League Trophy? Football League Trophy. I think it's the Football League Trophy. I think that's the proper name of it, which is what we should call it really, rather than the what did you call it? I liked your one. I had the second hand dealership cup, and you've got the what's it? The cut.
Cut and shut
The
trophy.
can shut trophy, that's brilliant, Adam. I love that. Anyhow, so yeah, but you're right. We will be looking out for results. I'm interested because I'm assuming Ward is going to get a chance in goal tonight, so it'll be interesting to see how he plays. Because he is our permanent goalkeeper. Obviously, Goodman's on loan, and Ward is, our permanent goalkeeper.
Yeah, I've got to say, I thought Goodman it should be our number one, and I know people are not happy, but he definitely for the second goal, it was a bit weird. I mean, our defenders all ran back onto the line, literally allowing them to shoot, and Goodman just didn't like go out. He went out, but he didn't really smother the ball or get in the way. It was kind of a bit odd. So I need to see him in person to see what he's doing, but there's definitely. I don't know if it's a confidence thing or whether it's just a flailing thing. Who knows?
Well, Niall saw him
possibly, on... Are you possibly saying our goalkeepers are like confidence goalkeepers? That's basically what you're saying about him.
I'm not saying anything.
You clearly are calling me a confidence goalkeeper. And if that's what it is, then clearly I'm happy to pass that mantle on to Mr. Proctor as the voice of the confidence goalkeeper. There you go. So that is now officially passed on. That is the other big update from today's pod.
Yeah, just, dear listener, just in case you're wondering what the hell's going on with the confidence goalkeeping shenanigans, that was the big thing about Nick Zaneth last year was in goal, that he was always a confidence goalkeeper and he had some amazing games. And then sometimes we feel like, you know, maybe his confidence levels have dropped slightly. But it's interesting. I mean, we saw Goodman live for our first game when we against Colchester, and I don't think he was to blame for any of the goals that we let in particularly. And he was, you know, doing some shithousery, which, you know, Niall and I quite liked. It was quite funny, and he was engaging with it. He was engaged with the fans, which was cool. But I think we were really spoiled, weren't we, with Alex Bass last year. Which is difficult. And over the course, obviously, of the years, we've been very spoilt with goalies. You know, George Long, Kel Roos were exceptional. Aaron Ramsdale, obviously amazing. He might be on his way to Wolves by the sounds of things. As a side note. Anyhow, the other footballing news over the weekend was Wimbledon women's team are now playing in the third tier of the women's league, and they drew 1-1. They, by all accounts, playing really well. Went one up, and then let in a late equaliser with a few minutes left. So it was 1-1. So it's nice to know that they've learned something from our men's team, because that's what we were quite famous for, isn't it? Like letting in last minute goals. So it's good that they've carried on that tradition. But brilliant that they're in the third tier. And they're competing, because my understanding is, I think Lewis, who we drew against, are quite a decent team. So it's going to be an exciting season. I'm looking forward to getting down and seeing a few of the games. And Adam, I think you were saying that we should have gone.
No. Well, that's the funny thing, is like Saturday, yeah, I was like, well, 12:30 kickoff. So then basically I'm miserable from like the end of the game for the rest of the weekend, obviously. And I had considered going to the first women's game because I thought I could probably do it. And then it didn't look like it was going to happen. And then, of course, yeah, Mark was there, text to say they're winning. And I was like, I should have just worked out how to get there, of course. But then, of course, it became a draw in the 95th minute or whatever. So, again, I was actually quite glad I didn't go, because I would have just been like down, 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 mood. So, yeah. But I definitely would like, I want to catch some more games. Obviously, more are going to be at Plough Lane by the sounds of it. It's a better league. It sounds from what I heard on the official AFC Wimbledon podcast that they've restructured some things with the girls and women's. And so that it's like a time to sort of really solidify that part of our football community. And so I'm really excited, actually. So yeah, I want to make sure I get to some games for definite.
Yeah, it is brilliant. It's great to do so, and I'm so pleased that the first game was at Plough Lane, and it seemed like it was a cracking game in a good atmosphere. We're definitely going to get down there and see some of the games this season. I think we promised that last season and have failed, but we will do this team. And also to say that, dear listeners, you'll notice that on our socials that we never post anything if we lose a game, because we are really, you know, miserable
grumpy,
old men.
Grumpy. They get puts in a bad mood.
Yeah.
Losing is a bad thing. Do you know, this is just the way it is. I mean, this goes back to like one of the reasons, I know you're going to mention this at some point, about being on the Don's Trust board, right? The one thing about being on the Don's Trust board is you have to actually also occasionally go into the director's box. And I, for one, hate being in the director's box because I cannot stand being with other directors during or after a game. Fine before, during or after, I'm a football fan and I can't cope.
No, it's horrible. It's absolutely, absolutely awful. So anyhow, we We're really bad losers, and that's why you won't hear from us after a game if we lose. So hopefully you'll be hearing from us most weekends. Okay. Sorry, Adam, you were going to say.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, totally. I really am for football, I'm definitely a bad loser. It puts me in such a bad mood for the rest of the weekend. It's just so bad.
Oh dear me. Yeah, anyhow, and I think it's a big congratulations, of course, with the women's team to Leanne Bell, who scored our first goal in tier 3. So that's fantastic. So that will be a question that we can ask, in the on this day thing and go, what happened in 2024? Leanne Bell scored our first goal. So that's a cracking bit of history. Brilliant stuff. Right then. So yeah, talking about cons and stuff like that, obviously, we are flying, so we've got I think upwards of maybe 150 people following us on X, which is just obviously we're phenomenal. And on Threads, because we're now on Threads, I think we're the only podcast at the moment that's on Threads. So not only are we the most woke podcast, we've doubled down on that wokeness by being on Threads, and we have got, as of today, 10 followers on Threads. So it's we've doubled our Fred followership over the last week. It's just incredible. But that's how woke we are. Now I'd like to move on to the DTB, and on that comms issue, what was quite interesting is that if you go onto the Don's Trust board website, and I suggest that people do this, there's a section there which is on frequently asked questions, and the last frequently asked questions covers questions that were asked in August. So, and it's clear that most of the comms goes through pro boards, which a lot of people aren't really on or aren't really engaging, apart from Adam.
But that's funny you say that, which we mentioned on episode one. It's got a little more active over the last week or so, but it's not that much more active from Don's Trust board members, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, this is their response. So it says that Don's Trust members forum pro boards is valued by some members and for the opportunity to discuss the club and trust with each other and ask questions for DTB. The DTB doesn't have a formal policy in place in terms of response, but the new chair, Angus Fox, if you didn't know that, is the new chair of the DTB, has put down the following to outline current approaches. So they won't typically answer questions raised in the general discussion. We can't answer some questions, for example, about commercially sensitive or confidential information. Sometimes we can't answer or even make a comment about them at all. Where we can answer, they try to give a complete picture. We won't answer questions that are slight variations to existing questions. So if someone's asked that question and someone goes back and asks a similar question, they won't answer that. We won't answer operational questions which can be answered by the club, for example, where there are questions already available on our websites. And then it comes on about social media. It says we won't engage at all with online posts which are divisive or have the potential for amplifying misinformation. So they don't really engage in social media. So it feels like you can't ask the same question twice on the pro boards and social media. They're not really engaging there, but obviously there are ways to engage. There are ways to engage, and there is a Meet the DTB sessions, aren't they? I think they're every other month now, and this Wednesday there's a Meet the Don's Trust board session with Kevin Wright and James as well. Sorry, I can't remember saying off the top of my head.
Yes, you're right. No, I don't think, but they don't. Oh God, I like the Don's Trust board. I know people who are obviously members of the Don's Trust board. I've talked to people who I don't really know who are on the Don's Trust board, but they don't really engage with the pro board stuff generally anyway. And there are questions on there that seem to have sat there that they could answer. And I don't think they're duplicate questions. And yeah, there's a whole Ask the Board section, and of course that's where I expect them to answer those questions, but they don't go answered. And I'm not saying that, The president of matches are doing things. I just think that there needs to be some, maybe someone needs to be given the time allocated to just like mopping up stuff on pro boards, because it looks to me like it just become unanswered, and then it just fuels sort of internal, because it's not social media, some sort of internal speculation. And there's a couple of things where it's like, you know, they're kind of making some of the posts on pro boards. You know, there's a question that is pretty legit, seems like it could be answered, or replied with can't answer that, or replied with there is already an answer, here it is. Doesn't get answered, and someone else comes in and just makes kind of a, you know, a kind of sarcastic comment about the fact it won't be answered, and that just sits there, and it's just like, oh my word, that looks worse, you
It's
know.
but I think it's really difficult. No, in fact, you can give us some insight into this from your experience. But I think it's very difficult. There are obviously people who sit on the DTB are volunteers, and already my sense is that they spend hours, you know, a week on DTB duties, and so then it, you know, there isn't someone whose like role is to just answer stuff on the pro boards, because in fact, I'm guessing they could be doing that all the time, is the thing. So it's so difficult. Now, what's you can give us some real insight, because I don't want to crucify, because I think the DTB are brilliant. I think the way we run is fantastic. There's a uniqueness to our club, which is brilliant. My feeling is it's really, really hard work.
It
Now, what's your
is really
feel?
hard work. I mean, I kind of where I'm at with it is I think that you probably need to have two or three people who are kind of DTB comms people that look at the pro boards, right? Because at that point you've kind of got a bit of going on and you have that bit of conversation, because it is actually quite a full-on thing, and you have to kind of expect that people aren't there 24/7 to answer everything, right? So that's the other thing I think is really important. On kind of just the board process and board presence, I think that there is nothing wrong with DTB people being on podcasts and saying stuff. There are obviously things that you can't say for commercial sensitivity, but it's like a politician going on a politics show, right? That they still are their own individuals and they still have the ability to have their own individual opinions. And I think that's nothing wrong with that. And that should be. That's fine. You know, you can kind of say, well, this is my own personal opinion of what I think. You know, because we are, you know, yes, there is collective responsibility in the board, but equally we elected these people onto this. So they're not all supposed to be like agreeing with each other all the time, because they weren't elected for that reason. So I think there is an opportunity, there is a reason for people to have that kind of open view. And I think that's probably healthy for us to have that kind of open democracy that you know, holding people to account on a podcast. So I do think they should be, and it might also possibly be that I happen to know two of the people on the board very well, and I think they should be allowed to come on here and talk freely. You know, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it does feel like we're, you know, like not just us, but other podcasts as well, you know, can't are unable to talk to members of the DTB. And I think to be honest with you, those people are slightly nervous about doing it and be and maybe potentially saying something wrong. It's a yeah, it's it is difficult. I mean, and maybe one of the things that they could just simply say is that, do you know what? There'll be a wash up of all the questions that are asked on pro boards. We will do a wash up and monthly, like they have this frequently asked questions section on the site, which is great. It's really clear. And maybe just to make that clear and say, we will answer those questions on a monthly basis. The trouble is sometimes there's going to be something that comes up which is more urgent. So such as what's been going around now about this 50 plus one conversation and having an SGM, that seems like, you know, that's quite of an immediate thing. It can't necessarily wait for a wash up. And yeah, so on that, my understanding is that I've just seen today that they are the people who put that together are a few signatures short of making sure there is an SGM. Although there is an SGM that's been called, I think, in response to this anyhow, for the 23rd of September. So having listened to concerns from members from the request for a formal meeting, the board of the Don's Trust would like to announce the calling of an special general meeting on Monday, the 23rd of September, where people can attend in person or online. Any resolutions? No. That's actually any resolutions can be brought for by members for that meeting. The deadline for members' resolutions for this meeting will be the 26th of August. Papers will be finalised on the 2nd of September. So I guess we can put forward that motion about putting Football League teams into Harry Potter houses. We could do that resolution. So yeah, no. So anyhow, that so that will be the that will be the that will be when people are going to talk about the five resolutions we talked about at last week's show, which sort of like have come about. It feels like around this whole thing around 50 plus one and trying to get an understanding about what that is before people vote on it. Now then, Adam. Detective Adam Proctor has been doing some digging around for us because we want to get sort of like to the bottom of everything. Am I right saying that the sort of like this thing's been floating around about having this SGM or this open meeting, what now an SGM, came about from the 50 plus one and the nervousness is around paying back the bonds in 2025. So what I'm trying to say is that people are this idea of going down to a 50 plus one is because we're worried that we don't have the money to pay back the bonds in 2025. Is that right?
Well, I don't think it is quite right. I think that is an extrapolation of what people have read. And I think the reason they think that is because the June 2024 finance report did kind of link these two things together, which I think probably caused a bit of that catalyst. Because in that report, it mentions the fact that we've got to play a bunch of bonds. And then it also mentions the idea that we could go to this 50.01. Because that could unlock basically £9 million worth of equity. But in that report, they make it really clear there's no one who wants that money. There's no one lined up who wants that money. It says that we don't have anyone who wants to do that. But I think because of the fact that it said we've got the bond repayment coming up, here's a financial report, and then the next thing underneath that was the 50, and we need to have a conversation about the 50 plus 01. Has got people jumping to the conclusion that we have to sell more of our shares to cover the initial bond payments, which isn't accurate actually. And so I think there's a bit of a, I think that was a bit of a, I don't know if that was a mistake by the Don's Trust board, but they should have, the financial report probably shouldn't have included this conversation about the 50 plus one stuff. Actually, it should have just contained the information about we've got an amount of bonds to pay, this is how much the bonds are worth, this is who we're surveying, this is what we're thinking about paying back, this is what we can afford, this is what we can't. I don't know why in that document the two things were connected, but if I was speculating and jumping to conclusions, I might conclude that those two things are connected. But I don't think they are. Based on other things that I've sort of read and seen, I think they just happen to be in the same document, which is a bit of a shame, really, because I think that's made people get stressed. Like back to the whole thing when we had worried about how can we afford the stadium, we had to do the first plough lane bonds. Suddenly, this kind of thing sprang out of nowhere, and everyone's like, "Oh, panic, panic, panic!" And I kind of feel like we put a bit of a panic in when we probably shouldn't
Because
have.
are we worried about paying the debt back? Because my sense is it's friendly debt, and is it being managed? So what we meant to be paying back to bonds next year?
Okay, so the total bond debt is like 10 million, and according to the documentation, we pay about 400k per year of interest against that. So so that's what's happening. And 3.4 million of that is the total that could be asked in January, February of 2025. That's the maximum that could be asked. So that's the maximum we would need to pay, 3.4 million. But in terms of what the club has been doing, they've been doing some surveys already, and And bondholders have to indicate what they're going to do 6 months in advance of January, February 2025. But so far, the surveys that they've already done that are not binding until this later one at the end of August, that the bondholders are probably going to ask for 50% of that money back. So that means what we'd need to pay back is around, again, looking on pro boards and seeing what other people are saying, because the numbers are slightly, they feel like they're a bit rounded up in some of the simplified documents, is 1.75 million. So come January, February 2025, we'd need to pay, from indications of what bondholders want, 1.75 million, which is 50%. The rest would either roll over, so they could roll over their thing, they could convert it to equity, they could also actually just gift it back to the club. So they can make a number of choices. We don't know what those other 50% have done. The other 50% could have said, we're going to gift the other 1.7 million to the club, job done. They might say, we're going to roll it over. They might say, I want to keep it, but I want it at refinanced at a higher interest rate. But the Dons Trust board should know by the end of August exactly what the bondholders want. And early indications was 50% were wanting to be repaid.
Excellent. So 50% want to be repaid, but then probably that other 50%, there will be a mixture of people wanting to roll it over, people gifting the money to the club. So there'll be a range of that other thing. But in terms of repaying that 1.75 million, the indication that we have to pay back, that is accounted for. We have that money. That is not a problem for us to be paying back. It's not something that the club, that we need to be worried about.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure about this. So I went on Pro Boards, and there's a whole conversation around called, and again, Pro Boards obviously only open to Dons Trust members. So if you're a Dons Trust member, make sure you sign up. You can go and look at some of the conversations that are there. They are a little bit difficult to find, but there was a conversation on there called Funds Available to Cover Bond Repayments. And an earlier part, Michelle Little, who's the Dons Trust secretary and is now sits on the PLC board as a vice chair, mentioned that the club were budgeting to pay back 50%. And so I said, and I'll just read what I wrote the first half, I won't read all of it because I asked a couple of other questions, but I said, so am I correct in understanding that we have plans already in place to cover the 50%? Do we have this in our bank, so to speak, or will we need to raise or do other things to cover the 50% payment? I couldn't tell from trying to read the reports, because I'm not an accountant, by the way. This is just what I've been looking at, and none of this is financial advice. You don't want to see my bank balance. It's a nightmare, right? But what Michelle then said, and again, I'm just reading what's on Pro Boards as of today, 20th of August. So this, Michelle said, the club has budgeted 50% of the bonds need to be repaid. If more than that is required, it is likely we'll open the bond to new investors to cover the difference. So my reading of that is that the club has budgeted that we can pay back 50% of the bonds. If the bondholders come back and ask for more than that, we would need to think about additional planning. And if you go and look at the Plough Lane Bonds website, it mentions that if there was an issue in regards to the first repayment, which is obviously January, February 2025, that Plough Lane Bond 3 would open, and that we would ask for investment there initially to look at the difference. Now, there was a thing about a cap of 11 million, and obviously we've got this like 9 million on there. I don't know if that cap would exist for Plough Lane Bond 3, or whether we'd be able to increase the cap. That wasn't clear, but that would still be more than enough to cover, probably even if 100% of the bondholders asked, if we were to raise that kind of capital. Obviously, that would be a different, you know, that would be another thing. But so from what I understand, in layman's terms, is that the indication is 50% of the bondholders want their money back. The club has budgeted for that in its normal working business and has allocated those funds to ensure that we can pay 50% back. If the bondholders request more, there will be needs to raise funds through additional means. Now, I guess some people might argue and say, well, we could, that 1.75 million we could have spent on players, we could have spent on this, we could have done on that. But actually, we had a big bond payment coming up. We've done some due diligence to figure out how much that might be. We've budgeted to ensure we can pay what we think it's going to be. The Don's Trust Board, the PLC, will know at the end of August, 6 months in advance of that, whether it's very different to what we initially thought. That sounds like shrewd planning and not being unsustainable and having to worry about selling out or doing anything silly. So I don't quite know how these two things have really got conflated, other than they were connected in that initial document.
I mean, Adam, it's thank you. That is brilliant, mate. Thank you so much. I think that's really, that's totally, utterly clear. That's brilliant. And my, and also the thing with the bonds, that was for a, that was set up for a particular reason, which is why we're in this situation. You know, if we hadn't have done that bonds, then, you know, God knows where we might be, to be honest with you. I mean, I think at the time there was talk of us completely selling out, and we don't know what situation that would have put us in. I think there's a uniqueness about our club which probably needs to be looked at a bit more in terms of how we're selling it. But you have to bear in mind that the uniqueness of our club has brought in people like John Green and that whole sort of like American interest. Yes, it's not what's gone on in Wrexham, but beyond that, you know, we have got this for a League Two side. We've got this huge interest from the States, and that's all been brought out by what John Green has done. And I think there's a lot of other goodwill because of the way that we're set up. But that's great, Adam. Detective Adam Proctor there has gone and done all this thing. Thank you so much. But I'm interested, Niall, because you've said in the past about how if we really worked with the fair game model, that would actually really sort our finances out. That's right, isn't it? Because you're talking about a restructuring about how money would be paid through the league pyramid.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of my frustration with the club about not realising it's probably the easiest way for us to sort out our debt crisis is to look at football's financial flow. And at the moment, that is one of the key debates that is happening in Parliament at this moment in time. So the distribution deal, the TV distribution deal, is one of the things that is going to fall into the remit of the new independent regulator. And what Fair Game are, along with loads of other clubs and lots of experts, have come to the very strong conclusion that the current distribution deal isn't actually fit for purpose in terms of protecting and delivering financial sustainability for football across the entire pyramid. And that is the number one objective of the independent regulator, to secure financial sustainability. Now, I can share loads of data when people want it. It's there's pretty comprehensive analysis that it needs to be changed. And the proposals to change it really say that you need to have more money coming out of the Premier League, going down the football pyramid. And you also need to look at how the money is distributed in the EFL and make that fair at the moment. At the moment, 80% of all the money that goes to the EFL goes to the Championship, 12% to League One and 8% to League Two, which on all the analysis is actually creating a competitive imbalance, encouraging clubs to overspend and encouraging debt, which is the issue that the regulator is out to fix. So if AFC Wimbledon wanted to actually sort out our debt problems, the simplest way to do so is to get behind the idea of football's finances being reshaped and back a whole load of football financial experts who agree with Fair Game's findings, a whole load of ex-FA chiefs, including Mark Palios, Darren, David Bernstein, David Davis, who all agree with what Fair Game are arguing for, and a significant number of politicians. If we do that, the difference that it will make to a club like AFC Wimbledon will range from between £1 million to £3 million a year. That is our entire debt wiped out easily in just a couple of years. That is probably our best way to look at rebalancing what's going on. That's what we really need to be doing, rather than, I mean, the bonds are a good thing and it's friendly debt. It's not actually bad. And the Fair Game Index that's out on Thursday will show that the way we're structured means that we're one of the most financially sustainable football clubs in the entire English football system outside of 164 clubs. So we're actually doing things fairly well. And we can also attract extra revenue if we go full out to look at changing football's governance and back what Fair Game are doing and try and influence the actual football governance bill. That is where I think we really, really need to focus and stop all this useless, not useless, sorry, wasted effort on an internal argument about whether we go from 75% to 50.001, which I have to say, there is loads of reasons why that is a really stupid idea, in my opinion, as well. But you can ask me a question about that in a moment, Matt, because I can go on for far too long. But like, you know, I do get quite animated about this because it just feels we are totally putting our efforts and our energies behind the wrong horse.
Yeah, so Niall, I was just going to say, Niall, with that in mind, because I think I know you. I obviously agree in that sense. I think kind of things just to kind of. I don't think the club's got a debt crisis. I think we've got debt that we can manage, and we're doing great. You know, it's kind of that where you say climate change versus climate crisis. I think we've got a debt concern, and I think the issue, as you've said as well, is that. If the financial situation within football doesn't change, we're going to be continuously battling against what is like called like, you know, this kind of dangerous market where we don't want to and have no desire to have an owner who's just ploughing money in, loaning money, giving money to try and make it to the championship. So the interesting thing is what you're talking about is that not only would us lobbying for this kind of change be a short-term win, it would be a much, much better long-term win because it would allow clubs to work in a more sustainable, sensible fashion and wouldn't be attracting the individuals who just want to throw money in for whatever reason. I don't even know what they're doing, really. I don't know where they get the return on investment. But, you know, so it definitely. I think it's a bit of both, isn't it?
Just to jump in there a bit, that there is also within the regulatory remit is monitoring and looking at clubs that overspend, right? So they're going to be the ones that are going to be penalised. If we look at a distribution model that rewards well-run clubs, then the clubs that overspend are also going to be penalised, and it'll be looking at the clubs that are more financially sustainable, which where we are at the moment, that's where we are. So the long-term future is the way we are, right? We will benefit the way we are if the club puts the effort behind what the model is. That's what we really should be doing. And my view also on our model is that if we go down below 75%, company law means that, you know, anybody who has a minority stake can just block everything until they get what they want on the table. So we can move into a hiatus. So I just think that is a foolish route to go down. And equally, on the John Green argument, is our USP is being fan owned. If we go away from being 75% and above, then we start losing what makes us unique and what makes people want to invest in us and what attracts people to AFC Wimbledon. My long-term view is that we have not marketed that quite well enough. I think there is change. I have seen improvements from certain areas that is promising, but that's really what we need to go for because that's what gets people interested and wanting to come through the doors. I mean, you know, we have to remember that we are in a stadium where largely the attendance is, you know, 7,500 home fans plus whatever the away take, right? Which is phenomenal for our level. We basically more or less sell out the entire home end every game. And the fans who are going, by and large, are people who were attracted from our story. You know, that's what makes us unique. That's why John Green invests in us. That's why we should be looking to get those people who actually give a toss about a well-run football club and going, well, I'm not going to be throwing good money after bad if I invest in AFC Wimbledon. That's what we need to be doing. And that's where I think we need to really ramp it up. So my view is the naysayers just like, look, there is a real good alternative to what we can do on Friday.
No, but just to jump on that, in that sense, I think you're right. Obviously, I agree in terms of I think we could attract really interesting investors. We, you know, the Football Manager sponsorship, the War Child thing, all that John Green stuff, all of that comes out of the fact of who we are, and that is because we're fan-owned. And there's obviously more opportunities in that space. I also think even on the small scale, you know, if we're not fan owned, I'm not spending that much money behind the bar. I'm not spending that much money on shirts. I'm not spending that much money on all kinds of other stuff. And that will not be just me. That will be a sizable demographic of the fan base who will say, well, I'm not going to, I'm just, because I was there. I bought one shirt when I could, when I thought about it, because I knew where those funds were really going. Whereas now, I know those funds invest in the club, the community, and everything about Wimbledon. And you know, if you want to see us drop in revenue across the piece and not just investors, that it will happen if we go. And I again, at this point, I totally agree with Niall in terms of the law of the land in England is if we go below 75%, we're stuffed. And so, you know, I don't see anything that's going to convince me otherwise. Now, I know we're going long on the podcast, but I also know that the vote, you know, this whole conversation about the 70 down to the 50-01 is coming from the Don's Trust board. From what I understand from reading the minutes, that currently that most members of the Don's Trust board are looking at that and recommending that we might vote in that capacity, which I don't understand, I don't get, and that they're going to do a campaign to explain both sides of the piece, even though they have a preferred side of the coin, from what I've read, from what I understand. I don't see anything convincing me to vote against, you know, going any lower than 75%. The only thing I wanted to ask, which I don't know if Niall will know the answer to this, is obviously it's a restricted action, right? So with restricted actions, you have to have a certain level of people voting in a particular way. If I don't vote, I reduce the amount of people that are voting. So that then stops a restricted action from being even called because there's not enough of a percentage. What do you understand? What's the score with
It's a
that? Because
double
I.
tick. It's a double tick motion from what I remember, which is you have to have a percentage of the members have to vote, and then they have to then be a percentage over a certain amount. And I think you have to vote twice. I
Yeah.
can't remember the exact process, to
We
be
had to
honest,
vote
Adam.
twice for the double tick thing before.
Yes, yeah, so it should be same as a double tick. So that's where it should be. We could be in a situation where it falls because not enough percentage-wise, but the majority vote in favour of it. But you know, and that's because I think people won't have got if the intel goes out with and the board recommends, that's going to sway it massively. And I think that is where I think when you looked at Dubs's motion, where that comes from is that the board should not be in a power to recommend it because I think that this is one that people need to be educated about. Because I feel that there is a real lack of understanding about the consequences of going below 75%.
Yeah, and for listeners, who are Dubs is Graham Stacey. But the big thing is about this 75%, because I'm sure that one thing the club will say is that there are caveats that will be put into our arts and mems that if we are at 50 plus 0.01 or whatever it is, that there will be various motions in place in our arts and mems to stop that sort of blocking thing that Niall you're talking about. However, my sense is that I'm not sure that we can actually go against the law of the land. So if the law of the land is saying one thing, which is that you can put in these, if you're a minority stakeholder, you can put in these particular motions and you can keep putting them in, which blocks, you know, things going forwards. So I think these are things that need to be really, really clearly put out and really clearly understood because, you know, listen, frankly, I'm not sure that everyone's going to get to the end of this podcast, let alone read the huge reams of information that's going to be coming out. So it needs to be simplified. So there needs to be that question asked, which is, if we go down to 50.0% and we put these things in, are we actually going against the law of the land? What safeguards are put in place? And if the DTB are recommending that we go down a particular route, I think that's going to be very, very, that's going to be very, very difficult. But this is not going to be the last time we talk about this. I'm sorry, people, we do talk football, but our passion is our club, and the fact that it's fan owned is our real passion. And yeah, we might not be getting up into the Championship or for however many years it is, or the Premier League, but we have our club, and we know it's loved. And there's a recent post that's come out from John Green talking about how much he loves our club, which is, again, another great piece of work. And I still watch the video that he did after the franchise game from last season. Beautiful piece, whenever you're feeling down. It's our club. We own it. It's brilliant. And, we're talking about all the little incremental things that might change if we did go below that. Listen, right now, I'm looking at my brother and at Adam. And Adam is wearing the War Child shirt from last season, the red one with the white sheep on, the black sheep in the middle. In the background, he's got his Wimbledon. He's basically got some sort of shrine to Wimbledon in the background there, which is fantastic. If you could see on my wall here, above where I'm watching, I've got the various different Wimbledon pictures and the Wimble Till I Die, quite mosaic. We love our club, and we love the fact that it's fan owned. There's lots of opportunities that we can still explore, and the whole idea of going less than 75% without properly knowing what the consequences of that are, it feels a bit dangerous. And I know people are really anxious to get money into the club so that we can compete, but there are other clubs in our league and in the leagues below. Don't forget the conference is full of ex-league clubs, and as is Conference South and Conference North. And a lot of these clubs would love to be in the position that we're in. So, and yes, we are slightly paranoid because we've gone through what happened in 2002, but let's not forget what the great strides that we're making. Anyhow, we're really overrun. If you've got to the end of this podcast, all respect to you guys. We're loving you, dear listener. Please keep tuning in. Follow us on our socials. Obviously, share around the podcast or wherever you get them. Thank you very much to Monfrere, Niall Cooper. I say that because next week we will be coming live from France, and for no reason. And thanks to Detective Adam Proctor. Thank you so much for your work, mate. That's been awesome for studying all of that. It's great Adam could do that. We're trying to get as much out of him now because he's in holidays. When things go back to normal, it might be more different. Thanks again, Niall. Thanks, Adam. I'm Matt Cooper. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.